Hey, everybody. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And I get to have a neighbor on the show today. I'm really excited to have Floyd Brown on. He is the founder of the Western Journal. And I got to tell you, if you're not familiar with that, you're going to want to become familiar with it because they have some of the best articles out there. I frequently go there to research things, to confirm what I've been told. And it's a great source of information. And we'll be telling you how you can follow up with the Western Journal. Also, our guest has written a book called Counterpunch, which is kind of the antithesis of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And we're going to talk about how to bring about change. And then because he's in Arizona, and Arizona politics and voter fraud is off the charts, cartel infiltration of our public officials to a large extent, courtesy of the Brager Report and John Thaler, that's out there as well. We're going to hit that and related topics. But first, we got to take care of some business. If we do go into war, the first casualty will be your food supply. And you say, well, how do you know that, Dave? World War I, World War II, food stamps, the whole nine yards. The government will seize as much control of the food for the war effort as they can, and you will be rationed. And soon, the only food you'll have in your house, if that comes to be, will be what's in your house. So what you need to do is get storable food. Get as much of it as you can, and I'm proud to be associated with Patriot Supply. And I got to tell you, folks, they are really, really good. They got specials. They've not raised their rates. They also are going to give you $200 of prepping gear and qualifying offers, and they have food that lasts 25 years. The food tastes great. I've tested it. I have it here. And I would also recommend, too, as an aside, that you learn how to hide it, because I do think food hoarding laws will be coming in accompaniment with if we go to war. So let me just highly recommend you go right now and familiarize yourself with the product, My Patriot Supply, and go to foodwithdave.com. That's foodwithdave.com, and you'll see the specials that are there. Along the same lines, if we go to war, we will have multiple attempts on our power grid. And if that happens for any length of time, well, the Naval War College says after 5 days, the number one cause of death is waterborne illness. And so you need to have a good water filtration system, and you just can't have one because things get lost, broken, stolen. You might have to transport volume if you're scavenging for water. So we recommend the Alexa Pure Pro Water Filter. We publish the research at waterwithdave.com, and you will clearly see that they're number one in the industry. Protect your family now by getting the food, getting the water. And also later in the show, you're going to hear ads that we invest in this program. Pay particular attention to Noble Gold. With the Fed payment program coming in July, I think it's a precursor to CBDC, and we've done a lot of shows on that. Do not participate in this. You need to look at what Noble Gold can do to get you outside the system as much as possible. All right, that's our business for the day and our live reads. Like I said, Floyd Brown founded the Western Journal. He's almost a neighbor of mine. We're about 40, 45 miles apart as the crow flies. And it's really good to have him on the show for the first time. Floyd, welcome. Glad you could join us.
Dave, it's great to be with you.
Well, my friend, I got to ask you something right off the top, and we don't have to stay here real long, but back in 2020, Liz Harris did her work on voter fraud. I did mine. We both paid a terrible price. The crows came after us. But in Arizona, we have a unique situation. I wanted to know if you saw this too. In 2020, the Democrats, I think, stole the election here, and particularly in Maricopa County. But in 2022, it was the Rhino Republicans and the voting machine scandals. You want to give your impression about that for the rest of the nation that may not be familiar with it?
Well, first of all, that's one of many false narratives I talk about in my new book, Counterpunch. I go over a lot of different false narratives, but the government, when someone is trying to perpetuate a false narrative, they have to come hard and fast at anyone who's speaking truth to power, and that's probably why you paid a price as a result of that. They come after you hard and fast, and they do several things. But first and foremost, they try to deplatform you, get you off of social media, get you to a place where you're completely isolated. And the reason this is because they want to make sure that people that haven't bought off on the government's false narratives feel completely powerless. It's all about trying to make you feel alone, feel isolated, and feel like there's nobody else that thinks like me. And so it's really important that when you are dealing with a false narrative, that first you keep a level head, and secondly, that you network and continue to talk to people that share your ideas. So that's, you know, really the thesis of my book is that real change is going to come from the grassroots up, as opposed from Washington down. And, you know, you can always talk to your neighbors and help awaken them to the false narratives, because they're right next door and no social media company can actually stop you from doing it.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, and I can see why your book is promoted as the antithesis to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, because they use a similar approach but more in a destructive manner. And certainly we see Antifa and Black Lives Matter following that pattern too.
So the first thing you have to learn when you get involved in politics is that the Republican-Democrat dichotomy is a false dichotomy. It's really all about theater between the two sides. And that's another false narrative that's ongoing. And what they really want you to do is they want people distracted by the food fight between Republicans and Democrats. But if you actually look what they do in Washington, it's a uniparty, and they're very united in how they move forward.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you use that word, uniparty. You know, this I'll give you an aside here. It's kind of interesting. I've been after the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors for some time. I mean, they defied two court orders to surrender Dominion documents, which I believe the votes, a lot of them were counted, if not all of them, in China. But it's interesting, too. I have history with Bill Gates, not the Bill Gates of Microsoft, but Bill Gates, Maricopa County former supervisor chair. He used to be my student years ago. I wrote letters of recommendation for him for things like law school. He was as honest as the day was long when I knew him, and he's a perfect example of how the system will spoil you. And we have rhino Republicans, and you're right about the uniparty. I believe Kerry lost because of what happened with the voting machines. I think that's the number one reason. They shut down in Republican areas at the time of opening. I had relatives that were affected by this, and one of them didn't get to vote. Two of them had to be persevering and spent three extra hours. It was crazy what happened here, and that was done by the Republicans.
Absolutely, with malice of forethought. The truth is that they didn't want Carrie Lake to be governor because she's not part of the uniparty, and that exposes them and creates vulnerabilities for those people that have sold out. So one of the things I go through in great detail, Dave, in my book is why do Republicans fail? In my career, I've been involved in four major wave elections. The first one, as a young man, I went to Washington as part of the Reagan Revolution. When we went there, we believed we were going to change the face of government, the scope of government. Now, Ronald Reagan was a good president, and he did bring down the Berlin Wall. But he never really fundamentally changed the scope of government. And then in 1994, I was running Citizens United during the Contract for America wave, which was Newt Gingrich. And, you know, we believed that Newt and the Republican Congress was going to change the future of the country and change the size and scope of government. Then in 2009, I was already running Western Journal, and I was very active in the Tea Party movement. And so I traveled around. I went to probably 50 different Tea Party rallies and spoke across the country. I was speaking with Andrew Breitbart and Joseph Farah from World Net Daily and others. We were speaking at these rallies, and we thought that 2010 wave election was going to change America, but it didn't. And then, of course, Donald Trump and the MAGA movement. Each one of these major waves, they would hit Washington, D.C., and then just like a giant wave hitting the beach, it would just, you know, break and then kind of go back into the ocean. And so I am asked frequently by different Republicans, activists, or people that are activists in politics, why do we always fail and the left always is successful? And I think of some words that a mentor of mine, Stan Evans, told me years ago, back during the Reagan era. He said, you know, Floyd, we came to Washington a couple of years ago, and we knew Washington was a cesspool. And now that we've been here a couple of years, what we found out is it's really a hot tub. And that's what happens when you try to work from the top down. So many great people with good motives and great hearts have gone to Washington, D.C., whether in Congress or in other offices. And once they get there, they may make a little tiny compromise, and then it's a little bigger compromise. And 6 or 8 years later, they wake up and they become what they were trying to defeat. And so the real way to change government is from the grassroots up. And this is where conservatives don't always do a great job. Somebody asked me, why is it there's so many LGBTQ people running school boards? And the truth is, that's the way the left operates. They go for every low-level job, from justice of the peace to town council to, county auditor, and they fill those positions, and they reinforce the decisions made nationally down at the local level. And so one of the real changes that I've seen in the last year is to see conservatives for the first time focusing on things like school boards. And that's how we will effectively change the country. There's over 3,000 counties in this country, and close to 3,000 of them conservatives could capture with a concerted effort. And those county sheriffs can do a lot of good to protect you. Those county councils can do a lot of good to protect you. Those city councils can do a lot of good to protect you. And we have to put more focus on these local offices rather than always thinking somebody's going to ride into Washington, D.C., whether it's Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump, or Ronald Reagan, and save the country.
Yeah, let me ask you a question along these lines here. I'm sure you're familiar with Jacqueline Brager and her presentation to the Election Integrity Committee of the Arizona Legislature. And how much credence do you give that report that says that the cartel money laundering operations on behalf of China have infiltrated a lot of Arizona politicians and even police departments?
Yeah, so I cannot really speak to the veracity of that line of thinking. I don't completely understand how she connects the dots in that. I'm not really qualified to speak on it, but I can speak on the overall thesis, which is the thesis that Arizona has deeply corrupt political structures, and that they have been and continue to be influenced by the cartel. And, whether you look at Adrian Fontes, who's now our Secretary of State, who was literally a lawyer for cartel members during the Fast and Furious scandal.
Absolutely.
To other examples of how the Arizona elite, including Governor Doug Ducey, did not do what was necessary to shut down that border with Mexico, which is a pipeline for fentanyl. It's a pipeline for the trafficking of children and all kinds of crime in Arizona is related to that border. And so, exactly how they're laundering the money, I don't know. Is she accurate? I don't know.
Floyd,
but what I do know is that overall, the cartels are deeply embedded in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, they're heavily embedded in the state recreational marijuana business. And I'm biting my tongue how far I want to take that comment. But I will tell you this. The Brager Report basically says a lot of the money laundering takes place with inflated real estate. And there was a case involving Yavapai County and a prominent realtor and her boyfriend, and they were the victims of attempted assassination when they opened up that can of worms in that county. And the Yavapai prosecutors are going after this assassin, but on the lesser of all charges. And these are the same prosecutors that had a hold of Hunter Biden when he had crack cocaine in the backseat of his rental car at the Prescott Airport. So, I mean, this is just an example. This is a case I know personally, because I spoke at this realtor's organization in Prescott, and they had county deputies there to protect me. And I was really caught off guard by that, because the assassination attempt had happened the week before, and I had no knowledge of it. Boy, was I in for a rude awakening. Mr. Hodges, we're here to protect you. If anything happens, hit the ground, and we will cover you. And I'm thinking, oh, what did I walk into? But I can tell you, that kind of story is pervasive in the Brager Report. And when I tell people across the nation about the politics of my state, Adrian Fontes defending the murders of Agent Brian Terry of the Border Patrol in Fast and Furious, people look at me with a third eye. They think I'm crazy. But this is real.
Most people in Arizona know about him. Now, we wrote about it on Western Journal.
Yep.
And did what we could to bring the truth to people about Adrian Fontes. But our media here is so corrupt in Arizona, it's unbelievable. It got virtually no coverage by any of the quote mainstream media. And Mark Fincham, who was an underfunded candidate, didn't have a lot of money, was limited in his ability to get that word out on through the paid airwaves. So no, there's real problems and another big issue that Arizona has is the I'll call it the McCain wing. You could call it the Rhino wing of the party. They always want conservatives to support their candidates when they win the primary, but then they never support our candidates when we win the primary. And so I think we've seen a complete breakdown in that relationship. And what shocks me is a lot of these Rhino Republicans would rather turn the state over to someone who's completely unqualified, like Katie Hobbs, than someone who challenges their hot tub here in Arizona, like Kerry Lake.
Well, I'll just give you one example, because you're right on the money with this. Former Governor Doug Ducey was just termed out in January. He gave a speech in New Hampshire to the National Governors Association, I believe it was 2017, and this is after the Chinese rescued Cold Stone Creamery, his rice cream business that was in big trouble at the time. And he said, oh, we love selling rare earth minerals to China. And this is very close to a quote. He said they need it for their military. And I'm thinking, in 2017, I went and researched this. They threatened to nuke us, the Chinese officials, four different times. Two generals, their defense minister, and another politician. And here's a guy who's the governor of a state saying that they want to sell materials to Chinese to help their military. That's our state government in Arizona.
Yeah, and China basically has a monopoly on rare earth metals anyway, because they don't care about their environment, and our environmental regulations keep America from producing rare earth minerals, even though they're in abundance here in the United States.
Well, this kind of leads us to a juncture question here, because it's not just our local politics in Arizona that are compromised by Chinese and cartel interests, and I could probably give you 100 examples of what I know, but at the national level, Mitch McConnell tried to destroy the candidacies of 8 GOP America First candidates by withdrawing funds. Blake Masters, a GOP senatorial candidate in Arizona, is one prime example. And then Rona McDaniels of Romney, I don't think I need to say anymore. She's the head of the RNC. The corruption that kept Harmeet Dillon from taking over that organization is off the charts. People don't have a Republican Party anymore. That's my point, Floyd.
Well, yes, it's deeply compromised. That's why I call it the uniparty.
Yes,
but the problem is it's not viable to form a third party because of all of the barriers to entry that have been written into the law.
Correct.
By Republicans and Democrats, because they controlled politics now for since the Civil War. and they basically legislated third parties out of possible existence.
Yeah.
Well, I think we would see some viable third parties.
No, I agree, but I think I don't know that political parties are the answer. I like your idea about a grassroots movement. So I've got a question along those lines. How the heck do you get these radicals on school boards? Is it George Soros money? I mean, how do they end up appearing at that level?
So the reason is because usually we fail to show up. So a lot of school board races are, quote, nonpartisan, and so the party activists ignore them. And then we've had a heresy inside the Christian church that has been extremely strong since World War II, and that is that, you know, there's this division of there's the sacred and then there's the political, and the two should meet, and that basically you have pastors in the pulpit that are telling their parishioners, you know, don't get involved in politics, that's dirty, when Christ's message to us was, you know, he should be number one in all areas of life. And so, you know, his church should be occupying every one of what I would call the seven mountains or the areas of influence. And one of those is education. And so, you know, in essence, the LGBTQ activists would take over the school board, and there would be a mega church across the street that wouldn't even be involved in running the school board that their own kids go to. And this is starting to change. And that's why I'm more optimistic now. I believe we're getting close to a tipping point because people have seen what not showing up does to them, does to their children, does to their country. And they are showing up in record numbers at places like school board meetings and town council meetings. They're understanding that, you know, the smallest jurisdiction in the world can have a real impact. General Flynn is fond of saying, you know, local action has national consequences, and it can. I delve into a Christian doctrine in my book. It's called The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrate. There's a great book that's been written on that by Pastor Matt Truella, and he basically goes through Reformation history, sharing with that Christian leaders and Christian officials, Christian lesser magistrates, and a lesser magistrate would be, you know, someone like a mayor who's less than the governor, or the governor who's less than the president. These lesser magistrates not only have the right to resist ungodly laws, but they have an affirmative duty to resist those laws, and they can resist those laws. But a lot of local officials, you know, they're always listening to the town lawyer who tells them you can't resist anything, and they've got to just buck up and realize they have a right to resist the upper levels of government. And when they do that, it's going to have a big impact, because our founders gave us a special little gift in the Bill of Rights, and it's called the 10th Amendment. And we have to restore the viability of that 10th Amendment so that people understand that states are sovereign, and that only those areas that are specifically governed by the Constitution really are or should be involved at the federal level anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the states are sovereign. I even would take it a step lower. I'd say the counties are sovereign. I'm good friends with Richard Mack, former sheriff of Graham County here in Arizona. And he goes around and he gives seminars to sheriffs on constitutional law and how to resist unconstitutional intervention from the federal government. He's had a fair amount of success with this. But he's fighting an uphill battle, and he's the first to admit it. A lot of these sheriffs are getting compromised. In fact, you know, I'm not going to go too specific for this interview, but one of the things that he and I talked about on a show he was on with me about 2 months ago, he said, and I agree with him, that we're seeing compromised law enforcement officials. And I'll be really specific. In Maricopa County, three sheriff's deputies had massive drug connections to the Sinaloas. They've been busted. It's largely been out of the media, and they're all Hispanic. And it's not an aspersion on Hispanics. It's the fact that we are guessing that these law enforcement officials have connections to family members in Mexico that the cartel have exploited, and this is how they get them on their side. They won't kill American families here yet, I don't think, but they have no hesitation in Mexico. And that's the degree of penetration we're seeing with law enforcement involving a county sheriff's office.
Yeah, well, we did see that they killed a family of Mormons on the other side
other
of the
side,
border.
Other side, yeah, other side, right.
You're right, but people need to realize that border has had two-way traffic for a long time. There's, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans live in Mexico, and it's not just Hispanic families. So the truth is that those cartels have to be rooted out. And now that would be a good use for our military, because the military and the federal government's first role and only real role that they have is to protect the safety of Americans and American citizens. And that role they're not living up to. But you talk about Maricopa County, I think the most significant change in Maricopa County in the last decade was when Soros came in and got Paul Pinzon elected sheriff over Joe Arpaio.
Yes.
And, that literally changed everything in the county because it changed the way laws were enforced in the county. And since then, none of the voting rules have been enforced.
Right. We're getting a little bit of a muffle effect on your phone. I wonder if you could just reorient just a little bit and speak directly into the phone. And
I hope, is this better?
Oh, much better. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was my caller.
I'm going to say this about Pinzon and that whole organization. It's typical of what's happening across America, isn't it? I mean, look at Alvin Bragg, George Soros-funded DA, pursuing an illegal case where exculpatory evidence is being ignored, namely Cohen's admission that Trump had nothing to do with any payoff to anybody.
Well, I mean, so you have to ask yourself this question. Why is George Soros so interested in these lesser jobs? It's because they have real power. And the conservative movement needs to learn this. Mm-hmm. We ignore them and, don't put real resources into them. I mean, just look at the difference between the resources that were put into Adrian Fontes's campaign compared to the resources that were put into Mark Fincham's campaign. And so until conservatives wake up, it's more difficult to steal elections at the local level than it is the higher you move up the food chain. And so it's clear to me that we should be competing for every local office and competing aggressively. And that means if there's rhinos in those positions, we need to be primarying those people at the local level.
Yeah, well, those calls, maybe we'll learn our lesson. But I ran about 8 months of campaign on my website and on my shows to unelect nearly every Republican incumbent. And I said, not all. Some have earned their stripes, and I would happily vote for them. But I said many of them are deeply compromised, and if you put them up, you've got a Democrat versus a Democrat. And people just ignored that message. My lowest rated shows covered that topic, and I totally agree with you. We have to primary out the Republican traitors to this republic.
Yeah, and part of the problem is these false narratives have been so ingrained for decades, and they didn't start with they didn't start with Barack Obama, and they didn't start with Joe Biden. I mean, I talk about a lot of false narratives that go back farther to the George Bush era. You know, I mean, for example, one false narrative was that there was, quote, weapons of mass destruction mm-hmm. in Iraq. Well, you know, a friend of mine, General Michael Flynn, was sent to Iraq to look for those weapons. And he once told me, he said, you know, I turned over every rock in Iraq. There are no weapons of mass destruction. The truth is that was another example of a false narrative that was used to grow the size and scope of the military-industrial complex. And Republicans are just as guilty as Democrats are.
Yeah, well, George Bush, I look at him as one of them, and that even goes back to what I call the Bush crime family. So, not
Yeah, no,
surprising.
they are, and so that's why I try to break this this false narrative and talk extensively about the Uniparty and the way. I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, even just like a week and a half ago, when Tucker was trying to show the tapes of the January 6th, and you know, the day after he showed one set of tapes, you expect Chuck Schumer to go to the floor of the Senate and denounce, you know, Fox News and Rupert Murdoch and Tucker Carlson, but you don't expect, you know, Mitch McConnell and then like six other Republican senators right behind him to denounce Fox News. So clearly, you have a cancer inside the Republican caucus in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, well, 18 of them voted for some kind of gun control legislation. So I totally agree with you. And I agree with your terminology. The Uniparty is a great descriptor of what's going on. But I agree with you in principle that we need to invest in local elections, but there doesn't seem to be a model to follow.
Well, I mean, you can follow what the left does. I mean, they run for everything. That's, you know, that's why you have all these LGBTQ people, you know, running school boards. And they use the power of the local office. And a lot of times, you know, they don't even have to bring up how left they are, because the issues in a race for town council might be, hey, we need two new stoplights, or you know, somebody wants to build a development, you know, just outside of town. Are we going to allow it? Things like that. So they, in essence, they cloak themselves, and you don't realize that they also support CRT, and they also support you know, these radical transgender things, and they also support. But those are never really issues in a town council race, so the left is able to effectively cloak themselves when they run for these offices.
Yeah, let me go to CRT just for a second here. I interviewed a lady from Colorado who was going around to nine school districts on the Front Range there, and she was training parent activist groups how to make a difference, and she wasn't doing anything illegal, all constitutionally protected activities. And Merrick Garland's Gestapo squad kicked in her door in her mountain home, put her family on the ground, kids with guns to their head. They manhandled their daughter, and they also came in without a warrant, and they left a warrant that was invalid as they exited. So I looked into this story. And speaking of CRT, here's what I found. Merrick Garland's son-in-law and daughter control Panorama Education, which facilitates a lot of these controversial programs, including CRT. And I'm wondering, where these violations occur at a state and local level, I understand how Merrick Garland doesn't get prosecuted for conflict of interest at the federal level, but at the state level, where are these people?
No, you're right. It's wrong, and a county sheriff should be able to protect the citizens in his county from you know, being abused like this. That's part of why we're seeing so many people moving, and there's this massive shift of population as people are leaving blue and purple states, and they're starting to take up residence in not just red states, but in the reddest of counties that they can find, because they find that they're going to have a sheriff that they can deal with and who is honest. They're going to have other local officials who are honest, and frankly, I think you know, that I'd like to know more about that story. It's not surprising to me. Because, you know, the Justice Department now runs around and basically, if you wear a red hat, then you're bad. And if you are a member of BLM or Antifa, they totally ignore you, even though you might be more violent.
Well, they don't care about the violence. I remember when Merrick Garland was at his confirmation hearing, and they asked him if he was going to prosecute Antifa for riotous behavior. And he said, well, if it's after 5 p.m., it's no longer a riot, it's a protest. That tells you all you need to know.
if it's after 5 p.m.
That's what he said. That's what he said in this confirmation. I used to play a clip of that on my show frequently.
Wow.
And it just, it's, I mean, they don't even hide their conflict of interest anymore. It's thinly veiled, but you can see right through it. But
no, you can't see through it. And, you know, but what we need to understand is coups in America are not a new thing.
No.
I mean, we've learned just recently that John F. Kennedy was killed by the deep state. Years ago, I read an excellent book about Watergate that basically showed it was a deep state coup and that, you know, Bob Woodward himself was an intelligence asset. Yep. And so, you know, this is not new in America. I mean, you remember the Church Committee way back that was supposed to rein in the intelligence agencies. Well, the great gift of the Church Committee was the FISA court. And the FISA court now has been so abused, it was supposed to be a protection against abuse by the deep state. And in fact, it was co-opted by the deep state and now is one of the tools they use to abuse people. So it, you know, as long as we allow government to continue to get bigger and bigger and badder and badder, this is going to continue. There has to be a radical reorientation in the size and scope of government.
No, I totally agree with that. And I like the local approach you're talking about, but here's my concern on that area. We're on the cusp of World War III. We're on the cusp of economic collapse. And then if CBDC is allowed to come in after they bring in this Fed payment program in July, then all economic freedom is out the door and we'll look like Canada and the trucker strike. So I'm looking at all these challenges plus several more, and I'm wondering if a local approach has the time to take hold and change America back to what it should be.
Well, it's the only solution. And, you know, does it have enough time? We'll only have to work it and see if it does. I do see people changing. I do see people waking up. I see people understanding now better than they have at really any time in my lifetime. I mean, I've been awake to these things since the 80s. Mm-hmm. And yet there were others that were awake in the 60s and in the 70s and even in the 50s. So, it's hard to know. I mean, there's this push towards global governance. I think the number one issue is to keep America out of global governance. And we have the tools to do it. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to be successful, but I know Floyd Brown is going to be in the fight, win or lose, because I'm called to fight. I'm not called to sit and let them take away the best country on earth.
What was your wake-up call, Floyd, to get into this fight?
My wake-up call came when I was in Washington, D.C. Right? You know, I went to Washington as a young man in the Reagan Revolution, and frankly, I had that very good mentor, Stan Evans, who said, you know what, this is becoming a hot tub. And I said to my wife, in 1996, I said, if I don't leave this town physically, I'm going to lose my soul or our marriage is going to be compromised. This place is just evil. And so I picked up and left. And but my wake up call came way back then. I knew as early as, you know, when I took my first job in the Reagan administration, it was as executive director of the International Youth Year Commission, where I had an opportunity to go around the globe and speak for the youth of America. And even at that time, what I realized was the CIA and the intelligence agencies were just using me as a fresh face for their agenda. And I didn't like it. And it didn't end well for them. And shut my career down, but that's okay.
Yeah, it is amazing how you have to get kicked in the teeth to to come to Jesus, so to speak, because I had a pretty similar experience. My dad was ex-Navy intel, and he used to work with German scientists that we captured to reverse engineer some of their theoretics in science. And so I knew a little bit. He told me a lot before he died. I read Pat Wood's book, The Trilaterals Over Washington, and I'm friends with Pat today. So I was aware, but I was just living my life. I was just a college basketball coach locally, and I was teaching my classes, and I really was enjoying life. We moved out to rural Arizona, and I thought, hey, we're escaping the crime, the drugs, and all that. And we ran right into the planned Kennemex corridor that McCain had co-sponsored in the CAFTA agreement then with Ted Kennedy. And they tried to steal my land and that of 300 of my neighbors. And it started an 8-year battle to hang on to our property. And then I started.
Was that part of Interstate 11?
Well, that's part of the project. But the part that they were trying to put through was a hub and a highway system where the Hassayampa River is, and it's the largest underground water aquifer in Arizona, and they needed our aquifer for their planned hub. We think we're okay, but anyway, I started appearing on shows, and we had some support with legislators locally, and one thing led to another, and I got a radio show, and then the rest, they say, is history. I never planned to do this. I had no training as a journalist. I was a professor, and I was a college basketball coach, and I was happy doing that. But when I got into this battle against McCain, I figured out, hey, our country is being taken away. And that was my real awakening to what was happening. And that was right around the early 2000s, 2002, 2003. That's how I...
Yeah, you know, when McCain moved to Arizona... he really moved to it because he saw it as a place where he could build his career. And he wasn't a Democrat or Republican, but he chose the Republican Party because he felt it was more vulnerable to his involvement. And he never really was a Republican, but he has he was a senator here for decades and then was even our nominee for president. And the fact that he wasn't ever really a Republican, doesn't that tell you a lot?
Tells you an awful lot. Of course, you know, he married into the Hensley family, and if you know that history, that's all you need to know.
Yeah, no, it's
But see what
it's a drunken and criminal history. That's all we'll say.
Well, Floyd, I'll tell you, if you know the Arizona story, you know the Wisconsin story, you know the Michigan story, you know Pennsylvania, you know Georgia, all the swing states. In fact, I did some work with some people in Fulton County on their election fraud, and that's the greater Atlanta area. And the five ways the election, I believe, was stolen here in 2020 were duplicated in Atlanta. It was the same game plan, same exact theme. I mean, ballot harvesting, unsupervised ballot boxes, Dominion voting machines with no accountability to anybody locally. That just, to me, told me everything you need to know. This was a really well-orchestrated coup d'etat against Donald Trump. It was incredible how they pulled it off.
And it is the real coup d'etat.
Well, it is. I think it starts, I don't know what your view is, but I look at when the Wuhan flu came in, that changed our election laws, and that makes you think this was deliberate. This was a deliberate...
Yeah, but it didn't change our election laws. Corrupt courts and officials that agreed with those corrupt courts changed our election laws, and they never really passed any changes to our election laws. They just ignored our election laws, and they violated the most fundamental rule of law in America, and it was wrong, and we're paying a dear price for it as a result.
So are you saying that the appearance of these unsupervised ballot boxes, for example, that was just done administratively? There was no legal action behind it?
Well, basically, they would have a Democratic activist would come in, file a lawsuit, okay, and then the local official would consent. They'd come to some kind of a consent agreement, and they wouldn't even litigate against it. So it was corrupt officials working with outside parties and corrupt judges that made it all happen. It was not legislative changes. It was basically judges rewriting the laws in cahoots with liberal activists and election officials that were compromised.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that, because I found that in the audit. When the audit was going on, my main source of information that set me on the path of discovery were election officials inside the audit that saw how Karen Fann and others were directing the audit away from the truth. And that was repeated. I had three election officials contact me about 60 days into the audit, and it was independent of each other, and they all told the same story. For example, by law, they were required to have control over the Dominion voting machines. They had to have the election codes, and there were lawsuits filed over this, and courts issued rulings in the affirmative. And to this day, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors still have not surrendered those codes.
Correct. It's deep, deep systemic corruption.
Yeah, but people don't realize, listening to us, this isn't a primer on Arizona. The Breaker report that covers a lot of this stuff incriminated 26 different states. I read a lot of their affidavits, and I got to tell you, I can verify a lot of what they said. I can't verify probably 80% of it, but there's enough there that people should be going to jail and the rest of the country should be alarmed.
Well, we should at least have significant law enforcement investigation.
Yeah, but when your sheriff is Paul Pinzone,
you're never going to have it.
Alvin Bragg, the DA, I mean, it's kind of like we woke up and it's a bad edition of the Outer Limits TV show. We control the vertical, we control the horizontal, we control every institution, we bribe all officials, we need to. That's why I'm saying I agree with your local approach because it's the least tainted and the easiest to impact for the public. I just don't know if we have time.
None of us know if there's enough time, but we should occupy the time we have and fight as hard as we can and fight as effectively as we can until the day when time runs out.
I agree. Have you devoted much attention to the compromising of churches, particularly large churches?
Yes, I've got an entire section of my book on The Church Goes Woke.
Yeah.
And talk about that extensively. But, you know, Jesus also has a remnant. And, you know, just because somebody goes to church doesn't mean they're a Christian. And so it's really significant that, you know, God does have his people, and his people, you know, sometimes they're in the church, sometimes they're not. But those people should be fighting for these causes. And I just felt like the reason I took the time to write the book was because there are enough of these people that can be woken up, I believe, to, if not protect the entire country, warn and protect localities and places and groups of people. Because like you, I think there's hard times that are ahead. I mean, I heard your live reads where you're talking about the need to protect the water supply and the need to make sure you have food. Those are prudent steps that everybody should take in a difficult situation like that. And also owning gold and silver. It's the gold, precious metals are the only asset class that don't have counterparty risk if you own them physically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you can't hold it, then you don't own it. I totally agree with that. And the counterparty analysis, that's right on the money. I thought the church could be a source of revival to wake up the people. But let me give you an example. I was in a large Phoenix area church, very large. And the pastor came on. He was talking about, it was assistant pastor. He was talking about Romans 13. And here's what he said. He said, he may not be a godly man, your leader, but he's God's man, and you must do what he says. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to agree with submission to authority. But he didn't finish the comment, though, Floyd. That's my point. He didn't say, but if he violates God's law, you have no obligation to follow him.
Right, and that's a misreading of Romans 13.
Exactly.
And that's part of that heresy that I said has been very strong since World War II, which is also that politics is dirty and, you know, we're just going to sit over here in the church and wait for the rapture to come.
Well, I've been in churches and going back to like the 80s where they used to be activists against abortion. They'd go protest, they'd hand out literature. you're hard pressed to find that today, and I understand why, because Merrick Garland has his goon squads arrest pastors for praying in public. And this is where I think people, if you want to protest, that's your area of protest. It's not storming the Capitol.
So I would totally agree with you.
Well, I would hope that we could invest in the churches, and I think there needs to be a revolution within the churches.
I think it's coming. I think there's a lot of pastors that are waking up because they are being oppressed themselves, and they're especially around the area of traditional marriage, where there's a full-on push to make pastors really capitulate to the idea of same-sex marriage. And that's where the rubber meets the road, because it's clearly unscriptural and it causes great distress in the pastor class. And so you know, finally there's an issue where they're going to hopefully stand up and be counted.
I spoke with a therapist who wouldn't come on my show in Colorado. And Colorado has a similar law to California, where if you're a therapist and someone is trans-oriented or they have sexual orientation issues and they come to the therapist is not allowed to direct them back to heterosexuality in more traditional solutions to their conflicts, even if it's in their best interest, in the opinion of the therapist. They can be unlicensed. They can go to jail. Isn't it interesting, and I don't know if you address this in your book or not, but they're even going after the therapist class, and I believe it applies to religious leaders too, that you can't dissuade someone from a choice to non-traditional marriage and lifestyle.
That's their push, and we're going to see how far it goes.
That's just absolutely amazing. Well, I know your book is not out yet, but do you have a pre-ordering
availability? Yes, it's available at Amazon, christianbook.com. But I really appreciate it if people would go to Amazon and pre-order it. And it's just Counterpunch, Book Floyd Brown. And so it's actually popped to number one in its area on Amazon. So people are ordering it, and I'm hopeful that it will have a big and positive impact with activists around the country.
Well, Floyd, I have to ask you this question, though. What kind of pushback have you received on the book, or do you anticipate any pushback because of your content?
Well, I think that, you know, when the book gets out there and circulating, it's going to cause a lot of controversy. And so I'm expecting pushback, but we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, like, I hope you.
You know, I'm very much okay with pushback. I'm at a stage in my life when, you know, I wanted to put a marker down of what I believe truth is, and so I'm going to lay that marker, and I, you know, whatever the consequences are, I'm willing to live with those.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because let me be very specific. Because of my experience with other authors, I'm hoping you have a backup for publishing, just in case. And if you don't want to comment, that's okay. But I have seen that happen, where someone gets a book out, it's not going to be a big deal, then it becomes a big deal, and then all of a sudden liberal publishers come in and bookstores, and they say, we're not going to publish this, we're not going to carry this. Do you have a backup plan?
I always have a backup plan.
Okay.
And a backup plan to the backup plan.
Well, tell us about Western Journal, too. I want to know about that.
Well, Western Journal is, you know, a news site I started in 2008, and it's our goal to every day share the truth about what's going on in the world and in American communities. We produce about 30 written articles a day, and you know, you can read our editorial standards online. I would say they're probably the toughest editorial standards anywhere, and that's because we only want to deal with true stories.
Give me an example. So someone's saying, I think I want to write for Western Journal. What burden of proof do they have to offer to get published?
So, you know, they have to be verifiable facts. And so it's You know, we usually want at least two examples of strong factual backup for any allegation. And so we're just cautious in making sure that we don't, you know, say things about people that possibly are not true. So, you know, we walk away from some stories. And if you read it on Western, you can feel really good about it because there's usually very strong documentation for anything we write.
What's the URL?
Westernjournal.com.
Westernjournal.com. Floyd's book is available at Counterpunch. And I think after listening to this interview, you people may not be in Arizona, but your state's going through the same thing. This is a worthy read. I'd recommend you visit the website as well. And Floyd, I want to thank you on behalf of the Common Sense Show for coming on. Very insightful interview, and good luck with the book.
Thank you. And Dave, it's been enjoyable, and I'll look forward to meeting you in person sometime.
Someday we will. Thanks, Floyd. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.